Hi, welcome to Secure Now Radio, where we interview senior executives from insurance. Through these interviews, we give you a ringside view of the insurance industry, its issues and opportunities. Today, Secure Now Radio is hosted by Kapil Mehta, co-founder of Secure Now, and his guest is Abhishek Bondia. He is co-founder and principal officer of Secure Now. He is a rank holder chartered accountant and have worked with company like McKinsey. He brings in global best practices in client service and deep experience in insurance product structuring. Listen to this podcast to know his journey from being a rank holder chartered accountant to an entrepreneur.
Good morning. This is Kapil Mehta, and I'm delighted to welcome Abhishek Bondia into the studio. Abhishek and I co-founded Secure Now over 8 years ago. And since then, we've been building out this company into one which sells commercial insurances to small companies. Abhishek, welcome.
Thank you, Kapil.
So, welcome to the studio. The purpose of this conversation is to get to know a little bit more about you and your motivations.
Yes. So before we start, Kapil, I must now formally congratulate you on this initiative, because this kind of initiative actually takes a lot of, thinking,
yes.
Right? Both prior and post. And it's wonderful that you've been, at it and, building this.
Thank you for that. Now back to you. I'd like to start a little bit with you telling us about your growing up years in Calcutta. What was that like?
So, Calcutta years were very different from the way you know Abhishek otherwise. So, the childhood memories were not so to be proud of. So, I was the youngest child in the family. So, always playing, always onto something which is not necessarily productive. Very embarrassing moments. That's what childhood was all about.
So tell us some embarrassing moment.
So, good. That's a good way to start. We are three brothers in the family, and I'm, the least intellectual, or the one, where the family has the least hopes on. So that's the way it was. So I never used to study a lot. In fact, I used to rarely study. One of the memories I have of my childhood is of class 10 board exams, right? I know your kids are preparing for it. And the moment I think about Aditya preparing for it and the kind of effort he's, putting into it, I think about my class 10 boards, and I was just slacking off. And I would play cricket all day and night till the time my brother, elder brother, who was also appearing for class 10, he was the studious one. And then one of my cousins, she was the even more studious one. She came to our house and said, look, I have to prepare for boards and I need Abhishek's help to learn accounts. And I had no idea that I was good in accounts. Yeah. And this was like 30 days before the board exam. And it was winters in Calcutta, which is not as chilly as Delhi. But like, she would study all day and night, and I would play cricket all day and night. And when she left the house, I realized that it's only 20 days to board exam, and I have not opened some of the books. And then I, somehow managed that through and stuff. So,
but surely, you are being modest, because for somebody who says that they didn't study or they were sort of as intellectual or intelligent as the others in the family,
yeah.
You went to the best school in Calcutta, La Martin, and then
yes.
You went to one of the best colleges in Delhi,
yes,
Shriram College of Commerce.
Yes.
So how did that happen?
So accident. So life is full of wonderful accidents. So the cousin I mentioned to you about, Ankita, now because of her, right, I started taking serious interest in accounts in a way, in a more academic way. I used to always work with my father in his bookkeeping, right, from class 8. So I had a curious interest in accounts, but not academically. But when I said that, look, someone is really looking up to me to you know, learn accounts from me, I must be good at it. Yes. And it's only because of accounts that my overall average for class 10 went up. And I scored like a 97, you know, in accounts, but everything else was in like, you know, 80s or 70s. That's how I managed a good school. Right.
So got it. So I may just add that Abhishek is also a rank holder chartered accountant. And my next question then is that we don't see too many people with an accounting or chartered account CA background coming becoming entrepreneurs on a very large scale.
Yes.
Maybe on a small scale. Yes.
Yes.
Do you think that's that is true?
I think the popular perception is definitely that, right? I think chartered accountants, by and large, don't tell the stories well. So, for example, if you look at Deepak Parekh, he's a chartered accountant.
Yes.
Right? I think there are many people in the financial services industry who are chartered accountants, but by and large, they're very understated. Yeah. You'll find them, for example, if you look at some of the, you know, folks in the Birla family or, you know, some of the old generation business family, you'll find a lot of chartered accountants there. And they value chartered accountants also more because I think they understand money and they understand business.
So well. I'm sort of taking a cue from what you said.
Yes.
Which is that what I hear you saying.
Yes.
Is that if you contrast old businesses to new businesses, like
yes.
we are in a new business,
yes.
in the new business, the importance of storytelling
yeah.
is high.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
No, I think storytelling is, you know, has been important and not important in equal measure ever since, right? I think if you look at 2001, I think there were many like new age companies, so to speak, right? Who, you know, spoke their stories well, right? But then there were companies which were robust. They continued to do well even after the hype was over. If you look at even now in the financial services sector, you have a lot of good stories, but there are solid businesses, right? I think somewhere in the business world, what is required is a very solid business. But at the same time, people ought to tell the story better so that, like the way you said, right, you know, more chartered accountants should get inspired, right, to yes. think that even they can do business rather than thinking that they can't. So I think that's where the storytelling is important. But I think business and storytelling are two very different, you know, things. I think business has to be about what you make. What are you doing it for the customer, right? And, you know, I think these are two very different areas.
I totally understand. And one of the, I have a question about you. And then after that,
yes.
I'll ask a question which is more general.
Okay.
But the question about you is that, you know, you worked at McKinsey for several years.
Yes.
And generally when one works in one of these world-class companies, whatever they may be, there's always a tendency that you'd want to build your career working in a company.
Yeah.
It could be McKinsey, it could be some other company. And what was your thought process in wanting to get into something entrepreneurial like SecureNow?
So, you know, Kapil, this is a slightly longish answer to it, perhaps.
We have the time. we have the time, so you can take your time.
So, I think for me, entrepreneurship happened very late. Hmm. It should have happened much earlier. I was itching to get into my father's business right from school days. Mm. I told you
yes.
that in class 8, I was helping my father, you know, do his bookkeeping. He bought me a like big executive chair so that, you know, I feel comfortable and all the motivation, the family. When I was completing my school, my objective was that I should get into St. Xavier's. You mentioned about college.
Yes.
So I really wanted to get into St. Xavier's in Calcutta because they have a, you know, college timing of 6 to 10, right? So, and the whole mindset then was that you get free at 10 o'clock, and then you can, you know, get to work.
Yes,
right. So, accidentally, I came to Shriram College,
okay.
right, and things changed. So, then I said to myself, after graduation, I will get into my father's business. Then McKinsey happened. Then something else happened in McKinsey, right? So, you know, it was more, you know, how things unfolded for me. So I think when I met you in 2011, I was at the situation where I was saying that, look, okay, you know, like corporate job is good, I'm progressing well, there's enough demand for me to work, to, you know, in McKinsey, you know how it works.
Yes, right?
You have to create work for yourself.
Yes.
I think there was enough demand supply arbitrage for me. But then I was not content with the way, you know, I could achieve things, right, or make things happen. I think that's the time I said, look, you know, now is the time I should take the plunge and do something else.
Got it. So I have a few more specific questions before I get to the general question.
Yes.
Just based on what you said.
Yes.
You mentioned that, you know, your father tried to motivate you by getting you a big chair and all
yes,
of that.
Yes.
But I think that was probably the wrong tack, because from what I know about you.
Yes.
You don't have, you know, we sit in an open office.
Yes.
You don't have any trappings
yes.
of any kind. And I think it's a very basic infrastructure that we work out of.
Correct.
And I think the trappings of success don't matter so much. Is that right? Or am I just making an assumption here?
So, you know how kids are to fathers. Now, when I, you know, look back, I think I had been quite a spoiled child.
Mm.
Right. So just to give you another example, moving
yes.
away from chairs. So somewhere, I distinctly remember, somewhere in class 8 or 9, one of my friends got this suspender belt, right? And I somehow said that I also want it, right? And, you know, we are from a, you know, middle-class family. But I, when I reflect back upon this incident, I really, really get touched. I made that request, and I never made so many requests. I made that request, and my father bought me a Park Avenue suspender belt, which at that point in time costed about 500 or 600 rupees, right? And I thought it was just a wasteful luxury that I pushed my family into. Which, and by the way, I never used the suspender belt. How can you use, how can a like a 10-12-year-old use a suspender belt? So coming back to your thing about the chair, you know. I would always throw tantrums at home, right? And I said, no, look, this chair is not comfortable and that. And then my father took me to this chair market, you know, to his friend's shop, and said that choose whichever chair you want, right? I want you to be comfortable in whatever you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I don't think I can do, you know, even a fraction of the kind of pampering I got from my parents to my kids. But it was more about, you know, a kid throwing a tantrum and the father just being, you know, easy.
So Abhishek, when you're, you know, as I listen to you,
yes,
one thing coming through very strongly is
yes.
that the environment or the family plays a big role.
Yes.
For entrepreneurs and, so,
yes.
and you know, also for you
yeah.
in a way. So tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us a little bit more about Ripsy, about the children. What do you think is their role, and maybe not there specifically, but the role of a family in supporting an entrepreneur?
I don't think they see me as an entrepreneur,
hmm.
right? I think you know.
They see you as a papa,
as a papa, as a husband who does not do his household chores enough,
uh-huh.
right? Or a you know son who doesn't listen enough. But yeah, so just to describe my family to you, right? For people who listen in, I have two daughters, you know, a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. My wife is a you know a PhD scholar at MDI. I met her at McKinsey. You know, three brothers I spoke about. The eldest is in Calcutta helping my father in his business. The you know middle one is in Bombay. He's the most intelligent one. And you know, when you talk about relative like comparison, and I think that's where things also have to be drawn from. Now he was the school topper.
Okay.
Right, and then he went into Armed Forces Medical College as a number one rank holder, and he won a Bill Clinton Prize, right, at a global level. So, you know, there is a contrast for my parents to measure against. So, yeah, they remain very, 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 very supportive of whatever I do. The thing that I get awestruck by is when I'm down, right, they know it before I do. I would call my father and, you know, he would know, he would just ask what happened, right? Rather than saying, how are you?
Yes.
Right. And so, that itself puts me at, so much ease that, you know, I think what else is support? You know, in my mind, I couldn't ask for more.
I totally agree. And now I'm sort of fast forwarding to.
This podcast is brought to you by SecureNow. We are an award-winning, technology-focused insurance broker, distributing pure risk commercial insurances to small and medium enterprises. SecureNow is a full-service firm that provides excellent claims support to small companies in addition to placing quality insurances.
The early days of SecureNow.
Yes.
I remember that in the first 2 or 3 years, we sort of started the company and then we tried to raise funds because everybody was doing it.
Yeah.
And we got into and we were unsuccessful, not once, but twice. What was going on in your mind at that time?
In terms of what?
Were you worried? Were you sort of... We got a lot of negative feedback,
yeah.
Some of it personal. And did that impact you in any way?
Not at all.
Why was that?
For me, it was never a measure of success. I've never told you this before, but when somebody asked me, you know, when I was, you know, joining SecureNow, right, what is your exit plan?
Yeah.
So, you know, frankly, I was stupid enough to think that this question was stupid. in my mind, it was about building a business, right? I think this venture capital thing, raising money, is a more recent phenomena, at least in my, my understanding or my, scheme of things. It was never a measure of success for me, so it did not.
I understand, yeah.
It did not impact me at all.
So, when you look at now more recent past few years, the company, of course, is much bigger than the 2-3 people outfit that we were when we started out.
Yeah,
they're about 300 people now. What part of the work do you find the most interesting?
I think that's a very, very deep question if you really have to answer it well. I think when... So there's a short term and there's a medium term, right? So whenever I have the ability, have the time and the thing to take a step back, right, and see the kind of progress we have made in 3, 6, 9 months on a project, right, overall, right, whether it is in terms of number of clients, whether it is in terms of uptake of a new product we launch or a technology, that gives me a lot of joy, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, just yesterday we were talking about some initiative on technology and, you know, I was pulling up our past email. We spoke about that initiative like 9 months ago.
Yes.
Right? And now what really gives me joy is that, look, there's something we thought about. Right, we put it in pipeline. It was not a priority then, but when we had the resources, we're putting it back in pipe, you know, a priority, and we're building on it.
Yes,
right. I think that gives me a lot of joy, right? That A, we are making progress, right? B, again, that's the kind of person I am. It's progress through iteration.
Yes,
right. So, you do something, you fail, you do it again, you may fail. But you know, every time if you are making a little bit more progress than what you were earlier, you've done two things. You've found a way in which it'll not work and you have made some progress. So
fantastic. So now I get my chance to ask the general question.
Okay.
Which is that, at least what I've observed over the past several years is when people join SecureNow.
Yeah.
Irrespective of the background or experiences, there are some people who are just entrepreneurial by nature, and there are some who are not. You know, they think of themselves more as sort of employees or staff or doing a very limited role. And a sort of broader, you know, I'm sort of curious for your thoughts on who, how do you look at people who join? How do you say that this person is good? How do you make a prediction that this person will work well, this person will be more entrepreneurial? I'm sort of maybe rambling, but more a broader assessment of how you're looking at people who fit into our secure now kind of or a startup kind of a situation.
Yeah. So I had this, inkling of, parameters, right? And, how to think about it. And, I had some, rough measures, which I would use to benchmark people. Over a period of time, I found them to be very true. Now, this may or may not apply to others, but I've seen, depending upon the role, not at the junior roles like, data entry and your operations role, but as you go to mid and senior level, I think ambition is very important. And by that, I mean that one should have an ambition. It may not be an ambitious target, right? I think there's a difference between the two, being ambitious and having an ambition. So, if you reflect back on class 12, we were talking about school days, you will find people in any school, any class, who want to be toppers, right? There will be people who say, I want to get into St. Xavier's. And there are people who, and large majority of them, who would say that, look, I would play it by the ear, right? Some would click, some would not. And, things will play out for them. This chunk, I'm worried about, especially on leadership roles. If you don't have an ambition, you're essentially, getting by, right? You're whiling away time. You don't have a purpose that you're trying to drive towards. For leadership roles, I think it's a no-no for me.
Yeah.
Right? That's number one, marker I would have.
Of course.
The number two thing that I would look for is a history of someone who has struggled, recovered, done well, right?
So we fit the bill based on what happened in the first few years.
Yeah, so, and you look at all the entrepreneurs we meet, right? Yes. There's not one person. And when I say entrepreneurs, I just don't necessarily mean people who started business, but even people in corporate jobs, right? People who have, built something meaningful in a company, they would have spent like 4, 5 years, 7 years working on a project. Again, the example I spoke about, you take a project and, you see it over iterations, right? If people are able to tell me that story, right, then it gives me a confidence, it gives me the confidence that, I know we're going to struggle.
Yes.
Right? We have struggled in the past and have no doubt we will struggle in the future, right? So, they may fit somewhere else more beautifully, right? For example, at least Google of the world don't have to worry about struggle.
Yes.
Right? We have a lot of iterations to go through.
Yes.
Right? So if someone who has not struggled in the past, right, would not be so happy when they come into the firm because, it's not going to be an easy ride.
No, it's not.
So it's not about the individual. The individual may be good or bad, but I'm seeing more as a fitment.
I know, I totally understand it. And both the things, ambition and struggle, I think very hard to, little bit when you're speaking to people initially, you can make out, but they're absolutely essential to success.
But if someone tells me that, look, I don't have an ambition.
Yeah, that next.
Yeah.
So, I have one more question.
Yes.
Which is that, all of us have... some of us have keep things which are very meaningful for us. For example, when in my first job at Hindustan Lever, I bought a small sort of semi-gold pendant. And my mother gave me a chain which was more expensive than the pendant I bought. But I always used to wear it till recently my son took it for good luck for his exams. And that's sort of a very meaningful possession for me because I bought it with my first salary. It is a ship's sort of steering wheel. So, it's got some yes. symbolism.
Yes, yes.
Are there? Is there something you hold close to you which has such symbolism?
I used to have Kapil, similar possessions, right? Like in college, I had one pen, lucky pen. Had a lot of such things, but over time, I have given them up.
Why is that?
I have somehow seen that superstitions, This is a little bit superstitious.
Of course.
I used to be, very superstitious earlier, right, about these things and be very possessive about it. Sometimes it is not very good for you, right? Yes. Then gradually I give it up rather than thinking more about, one or two objects, right? And I fully appreciate where you're coming from.
No, I totally,
right? I don't wear any, rings, right? Or any jewelry for that matter.
You better hide my ring.
I have one thing though. I have a photograph of my grandfather in my wallet. That was a photograph I got when he had just died. And I was given that photograph by my uncle to go and make a big picture of it out of it because they wanted to put in the papers. So I somehow managed to keep that picture. So it's been 13 years now. So I have kept that picture with me.
Very nice.
But most other things like that, I have just done away with.
Fabulous. And I think, that's brings us to the end of this conversation. Yes. I'm sure there'll be many other conversations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for, taking the time. And
thank you for listening to Secure Now Radio. Subscribe to Secure Now Radio on your podcast app to hear future episodes. Next, we interview Deepthi Bhaskaran, editor personal finance of the Mint newspaper. Deepthi speaks about the thought behind and the evolution of the Mint Secure Now Mediclaim ratings that compare all the health insurances available.